Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Hello and welcome to the China Shop. I am shopkeeper Flary. I know Dan's gone, but with me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. And Kyle is celebrating a big promotion today. He is the brand new national refiner of the definition of recession, chief of short side risk management, lead price changer for his local gas station, and vice president of moving averages at Order Flow Labs. Kyle, how you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Man, I got a lot of promotions this week.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Better than Dan, who I think Dan might actually be getting demoted.
Moving up in the world.
Oh, man, how are you doing? You guys had a busy day today.
I'm good. Yeah, it's been crazy. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary for Orderful Labs, so we were streaming all day. And, you know, what best to do after streaming for 8 hours than to join the team here at Two Bulls? So, appreciate you guys having me.
No problem.
Well, let's get it started. All right, guys, come on into the shop with us today as we sit back, relax, and hedge against the rage machine. Welcome to any new listeners just joining us. We are here to smash our way through a complete set of fine china, sharing our ever-growing strategies for trying to maximize gains. I don't know why that makes me laugh. And cut your losses.
Because we're bad at it.
Oh, man. And if you're new to the shop and futures trading in general, you can always check us out at orderflowlabs.com, where we provide world-class order flow tools to help you gain confidence, reduce screen time, and develop your edge. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and YouTube so you never miss a blog, a stream, or just a random shit post.
That's great, Flary, but you want to do one where you talk about our news?
No, we're good. We're good. I think that was good, don't you?
All right.
Well, Kyle, do we have any show news to report here?
Whose show?
Yeah, that's good. We don't have a show yet, but watch out.
Yeah, obviously, we got our shop, so if you want to show your support and buy some shit, that'd be the place to do it. We just finished recording with Lance Bellin. He's a CFP and author of More Wealth, Less Taxes. Next week, we'll be talking to Sammy Ellard King, founder of Up the Gains. After that, we got Joe Sakala from the Dream Exchange, maybe. We still got to confirm that. And then co-host of Stacking Benjamins will be joining us, Joe Salce.
Nice, you guys are lined up. I have to get myself some of that swag. I got to admit, when I first joined the Discord, I thought it was a troll, and that like if I put my address in there, you're going to either send me something I didn't want or not really send me anything and, you know, get my social security number or something. So I still got to get some of that swag that you guys have.
I've got a t-shirt with your name on it.
All right, let's do it.
You and Job and Leo, I got to get something to all you. You guys don't all work in the same building, do you?
No, there's no building. The crazy part is that we've never even met. We're literally five strangers from the internet that built the company I'm trading.
Really? Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, pretty cool. Well, anyways, with all that aside, we have a savory, succulent, scrumptulescent show for you guys today. We have lots of market-moving news, plenty of stocks on the radar, and more options than Nigerian brothers. Let's get started. As always, you can reach out to us. We love your messages and your comments on Twitter, Facebook, on our Discord. The link's in the episode description if you guys need to check that out. And it's not the Orderful Labs link. It's the actual link. Or if you're just old school and want to send these guys an email, go ahead and send it to twobulls@financialineptitude.com. You better figure out how to spell that on your own, because I could never spell that. And that's the number two. Or you could give us just a phone call at 725-222-BULLS. Is that even a real number? And it's 22. Sorry, that's crazy. I'm calling that after this.
It is. You might be caller number 9. We're still waiting for that.
Or one.
I think we're up to 4 right now.
Oh, man. I'm totally calling it after. If you answer that, I'm going to die.
No, it's just a voicemail.
Oh, funny. Feel free to reach out, guys. Maybe you've got a hot stock tip. Maybe you want to tell us about a great trade you just made, or maybe you just bought up all of Worm's prison debt. Your chances of collecting $15,000 rest solely in the hands of a local New York rounder beating an Oreo-eating underground casino operator in a high-stakes game of poker. I don't know.
Actually, you know what? I had a question about that. So Rama is the one who bought the debt.
Bought the debt.
So didn't he get kind of fucked over by Teddy KGB when Teddy was the one who decided to gamble it away?
You think Teddy paid him?
I don't know.
Is that in the sequel? There was talk of a sequel and they never actually followed through with it. I was hyped for that. That's like the movie before you go play a big tournament. You gotta watch Rounders.
Right.
Or just any time it comes on TV in general.
I think Grandma got screwed on that whole deal. I think he was the one who was out his money.
He might have. He got a few bucks. He beat him up in the bathroom.
Oh, that's right.
And he, you know, I mean, he had a pretty legitimate pimp game running. I mean, it wasn't like A+, but it's a solid C.
He wasn't hurting.
No, he was good. Anyways, all right, it's time to talk about how poorly Kyle and Dan have done in their most recent market bets. And I think we unfortunately have some bad news here.
Oh, yes, because both of us were a little too conservative. If we had just gone balls out, no stops, I think either one of us could have actually taken it. But I shorted Meta the close before they reported earnings, and then I closed out the trade the immediate day after. So that went from 169.58 and finished at 160.72, which brought my total to 553.91. Dan tried to go long SOXL because he was betting the semiconductor run was not done. He was right, but he put a super tight stop at 1675 and was stopped out the day of the trade.
No.
Without that, I think he would have actually won. And then Random went long AEL. That bastard was going with one of those stupid life insurance companies. That opened the week at 35.95, closed at 37.56. So Random takes the month with 565.74.
No.
Yeah.
C'est la vie. Sometimes that tight stop, it protects the account, but it doesn't win the challenge. That's for sure.
I think Dan was just hoping we'd all lose. Just pass him up because he was sitting right around break even.
He had less loss. That's a strategy, I guess.
Sometimes it works.
Yeah, no bet. I'm cash. That might be mine.
Yeah, that's funny. Stick around. We'll have another bet at the end of the episode. And I think we're going to let Flary pick the consequences. So maybe we'll wrap that up when we make next week's bet.
Oh, I got something good for you guys.
Oh, no.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about some news. What do we have? What's going on? It's been a wild week. I mean, the market's obviously going a little bit crazy. There's a lot of news coming in and out. There's tons of different stuff going on. What do you have for us as far as news goes?
Well, first, I got the song to lead into the segment if you want to hear it.
There's a song? Yeah, I want to hear it.
Dow drops deep on moving inflation, COVID frustration, war damnation. We're just bringing you the fucking news. You gotta recognize the game if you don't want to lose. We're just Skip-Dee-Bulls trading information.
Yeah, we are.
Rioters raiding, insider trading, taxes are raising, bills on the hill. We got a crypto mill. No, they ain't growing weed. When the Fed speaks today, it's some shit we don't need.
Sing it, man.
Two bulls trading information.
What?
Two bulls trading information.
I'm inclined to agree.
Two bulls trading information.
Is accurate, very accurate. What is it?
All right. Well, I apologize. I missed that there was a amazing rap P Diddy like It was almost a little R&B in there too, but I'll be more ready for that next time.
But, all right, what should we start off with? What's the big news of the last week? We've got the FOMC. We've got the unofficial start of a recession. Let me start with that one. The Commerce Department had announced Thursday that the GDP has decreased at an annual rate of 0.9% in the second quarter after falling an annual rate of 1.6% in the first 3 months. Now, this normally is the standard definition, or used to be the standard definition of a recession.
Keyword used to be.
But apparently, I guess maybe that's not quite the case anymore.
And when you say used to be, it's like for all-time history.
Yes.
Like this was definition of a recession.
This was the definition like as of last week.
The interesting thing is like we're not quoting an article here from some random whatever. Like the White House put this out and literally just said we're moving the goalpost. That's it. We're moving it. What you thought was a recession before? Not a recession anymore. Sorry, guys. You're just going to have to wait.
Did they say anything about why or justifying it, or they just do it?
Yeah, I wish I knew the gal's name, but she's the new like press secretary or whatever. She came on, and of course, the guy who always presses these guys, pun intended there, but he came in and was like, so you guys are just changing the definition of a recession. And oh, she wordsmithed the shit out of this thing. I mean, it was like, she was like, well, it was never really a definition. And yeah, it's like, well, okay, but that's what everybody has gone with for like right. The history of tracking recessions, like since they started doing this data collection, this was the standard for how do you define whether or not you're in a recession. And the White House just officially made a statement, and they made the statement before the numbers came out on Thursday.
Oh, that means they knew.
Oh, so they were just getting in front of it. And, right. You know, I mean, the beautiful thing is then the market just takes that as bullish and decides to run all week based upon, you know, the White House just changing the rules of recession. But it sounds bullish to me. I don't know.
Sounds like Biden calling in favors.
Yeah, right. We're going to need to change this.
The crazy thing to me was that like what they keep like pumping up is like the reason why it's not a recession. They keep trying to talk about how strong the job market is. And we talked about this last week when Dan was here. Like they still haven't gotten back to pre-COVID employment levels. The jobs market isn't as strong as it sounds.
It's not strong. The economy, I mean, inflation is ultra high. There's a tailwind to a lot of these things that probably hasn't really even set in yet. And the reality of it is too, the interesting thing is like, why keep kicking the can mm-hmm. down the road? At some juncture, they're going to have to say, okay, we're officially in a recession, unless they somehow magically are able to turn these numbers around before they go out next. And then they'll be like, oh, we avoided recession, which is probably what will happen. But, you know, when they say that, though, like when they finally announce that we are in a recession officially is typically when we mm-hmm. see that bottom, you know, that sort of like capitulation type move, whether it's, you know, in the economy, in the stock, whatever. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to admit it at some time. Why keep kicking the can down the road? It seems so odd.
I think the plan is to admit it when it's no longer a recession anymore. I think that's the goal.
Like, yes. Oh, that's good. Hey, by the way, guys, we went back, we looked at the data. We were in a recession. So if any other president comes in and they right. happen to be from a different party, we're now redefining the old definition of a recession. Moving forward, we were wrong. Sorry.
Wait to announce it until you fixed it. That's always the smart move. Like, sorry, honey, I broke your car. But the good news is I got it repaired already. You didn't know. Meanwhile, she's trying to drive it to work.
It's not going to cost you anything.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. What else do we have?
Looks like the announcement of a deal.
Yes. So Schumer and Manchin have announced a deal. I don't know what the hell they mean by reconciliation, but it is supposed to involve things with tax, climate, energy provisions. I think this is the green energy bill they've been trying to enact for how long? Basically since Biden took over. It's called the reconciliation bill.
Follow the money. Where's the money?
Yeah, more than $400 billion over 10 years, fully paid for by closing tax loopholes on the richest Americans and corporations. Supposed to reduce deficits by $300 billion over that decade, which would, how much is the actual deficit right now? Isn't it over a trillion?
Is it a number we still recognize anymore?
I don't think I could write it out. I think my hand would get cramped before I finished.
Do you remember they used to have those old, I don't know, maybe I'm dating myself. I like there was the billboards that would show the national debt and you would drive by and the number would just be like scrolling up. I know somebody's old enough to remember this. Like that billboard would be stretched across the highway these days. I don't even think it would work anymore.
It's bigger than McDonald's is how many people have been served.
Or the Mega Millions jackpot.
Oh, that's much bigger than that. But this bill is supposed to raise an estimated $739 billion, which includes $313 through a 15% corporate minimum tax, $288 billion through prescription drug pricing reforms, $124 billion through the IRS enforcement of reform tax code, and $14 billion through closing the carried interest loophole. And it's also supposed to invest $433 billion into a suite of energy and climate-related programs. And I think this is why some of the green stocks were seeing a bit of a bump this week. At least that would make sense.
Yeah, a little eco-friendly play there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although it seems to me that whenever those things happen, like people get excited about the lead up to it and then they dump it once the actual news comes out. I wonder if there's a green energy ticker.
Yeah, how do we express that edge best?
Well, the best thing to do is to marry Speaker of the House, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was a nice segue into. Well, unfortunately, though, I think the run is over based upon this next article. You know, I don't know what these guys are thinking, but I think they're going to make something called insider trading illegal now. Although it was illegal for everybody except for politicians. So.
Oh, no, they just said from trading stocks. You're just assuming that any trading they do is insider trading.
Oh, so they just can't. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, well, it was a good run. I think they'll still find a way.
It's funny the people who are against it, too. Like, that's not fair to people. This is a free market. And if you're involved, if you're an American, you should be allowed to participate. Yeah, well, not when you're getting information like how likely a bill is to pass.
That last one was a little too sketchy. I think like there was pushing the envelope, which is what, you know, Pelosi yeah. is pushing the envelope here, right?
And yeah.
The last one was basically just like thumb in the air, like, you know what? We're just going to do this. Hours before they announced the CHIP Act,
yeah,
they make it public that they have a multi-million dollar options position, which is, you know, multiply that by 100. They have a multi-million dollar option position in that same sector. It's insanity.
Well, didn't she close? Oh, she closed out her NVIDIA then. So did she keep all the other ones?
Oh, yeah. Well, and NVIDIA, the trade didn't work, did it? I heard she lost money.
Well, she closed it out because of the optics of it. Like, it just finally occurred to her that maybe this is a bad idea.
Oh, God.
And it's also the first time I think she's ever reported a trade on the same day that she just disclosed it.
Right, like pushed it too far. What are you doing?
Normally, there's like a two-week delay before like what they actually do and when it actually gets, you know, announced.
And it's funny because I wonder if that's why this time the trade didn't work. the market was actually able to like be like, all right, enough's enough. We're taking some of this money.
Well, I think she literally like closed it out because she was afraid of getting in trouble.
Well, rightfully so. So what is the actual legislation that we passed here as we're kind of joking about it? Like, can she still do that? Can you make trades if you're part of a committee and you have inside sort of information on that? What's it looking like?
I mean, it basically says that it's going to force the lawmakers to choose between putting their stocks into a qualified blind trust or completely divesting their investment portfolios.
It's reasonable.
So that's actually, I have a hard time believing that this is going to go through.
But it wasn't her trading them. It was her husband. So
yeah, well, the spouses are mentioned in this as well.
Okay, they are. Okay.
The lawmakers, their spouses, and senior staff.
All right.
So I think that's how they're trying to close that loophole. But I mean, just call up any friend.
Yeah, they'll figure it. There's always a way. Where there's money to be made, there's always a way.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah, no, Pelosi was against this. She's long defended their ability to trade stocks. Here's her quote. This is a free market. And people, we are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that. That was back in December.
Jeez.
It's crazy how you get a job that makes you $200,000 a year or somewhere around there. You can vote your own raises, but yet somehow you're all millionaires.
And she makes way more trading the market. I mean, her and her husband beat basically every hedge fund out there.
They're so good, aren't they? They're just such good traders.
Oh, man. If I had just half a bit of that skill set, I would be set.
Did you see that Twitter meme that was going around? The that Nancy Pelosi's husband.
No, no idea.
He's trying to sell his method of marrying Speaker of the House. Oh. That was brilliant.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, the last one we got, I don't think we talked about it yet, but we do have to talk about the Fed FOMC meeting. And I think you probably understand this language and what it means more than I do.
Understand it, maybe. Do anything with it? I don't know. We'll see.
What was bullish about the whole thing? That's what I want to know.
It's just always bullish. Isn't that the new rule? It doesn't like matter. Well, I think, okay, so the big thing was what was going to be the rate hike, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody thought it was going to be, you know, 75. So that being what it was, I think the rest then becomes what was going to be said, like what is sort of the look forward, what, you know, what is going to be the plan, and, you know, what is the outlook, and what mm-hmm. are they going to admit on the outlook, and what would they potentially mention on like where we came from and what kind of tools did they use? Cause he loves to use the word tools, right? Like,
right.
Oh, our tools, you know, what kind of tools did they use as they came into this point of, you know, another rate hike. So, you know, I don't think it was any new news. I think to some extent the market sort of already has that priced in because it's following very much sort of the plan that is, you know, has been previously sort of laid out. I think the big piece was, okay, what are they going to say in addition to that? Mm-hmm. And that wasn't really anything too hawkish. I think if anything, they were kind of saying that they think that we're going to, you know, continue this sort of like soft landing and, you know, we're going to be okay. Like you said earlier, you know, jobs markets are still good and all of sort of this fluff that they're doing. So, you know, I think the big picture will be, do they continue to just kick this can down the road until it's better? And then they, you know, to your point, like, oh yeah, maybe that was worse than we thought it was, but now it's better. So no big deal.
Right.
That we went through that. But, you know, overall, you know, again, there's a big move. Usually it's the wrong move in the markets. And then, you know, the market continues to find whatever happens here and whatever reaction they have to these FOMC notes and speeches to be relatively dovish. And they just keep bidding the market up after them. So, and here we are again.
The thing that scares me is that they're still committed to shrinking the balance sheet. And I'm just worried about how aggressive they're going to end up getting with that.
Didn't they say that last month too, though, or whatever, yeah, last meeting? Yeah. And then they like snap turned around and bought like billions and billions more of bonds right away?
No, I thought they were done buying. I thought they were letting everything like fall off now at this point.
Well, they said that, and then they bought billions more.
When do they do that?
I don't know. Fact check me. Do we have a fact check troll that follows the...
I'm sure we can get somebody.
You stated incorrect information. None of this is financial advice and...
Oh, no, don't worry. There's an intro disclaimer.
Okay, cool.
If you haven't heard that yet, it does refer to you as an idiot on a podcast, just yeah. So you know.
Anyone who takes advice from the two of us, you got it coming.
So now I think the one thing that is a little bit bullish about this is they're not expected to do 75 again. I think that they've kind of quelled the fears of the more aggressive rate hikes going forward.
I mean, typically we'll see one more, so we'll see. We'll see what they do, but
one more half point or one more three quarter?
One more three quarter.
Oh, wow.
And again, we haven't, you know, to go back to like one of the other stories we talked about, we haven't officially hit a recession yet. And so, you know, to see one of these additional rate hikes once they announce, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, I guess, yeah. Is what I'm saying. Because right now they're basically changing the script as we go and mm-hmm. rewriting it as we go. And so, you know, I think basically anything we know as how the Fed is going to handle a declining market and a declining economy is basically out the window at this juncture, and they're rewriting the book. So, you know, I think this meeting and this announcement was sort of as planned, but also anything could happen as we move forward. So
are they really rewriting the script? Because it sounds like they're using the inflation script. I think I heard Janet Yellen saying something about the recession fears, or the I think she called it transitional in nature, I think is what she said. Like, that sounds very familiar.
I think like rewriting the script and the fact of like, how did we get here to this yeah. point without like admitting we were going to get here? I mean, basically every talking head on Twitter knew we were going to be here 2 years ago, and here yeah. we are. Maybe 2 years is a little far out, but whatever, a year and a half or something like that. And here we are. And these guys, you know, they just got here, what, like 2-3 meetings ago? So,
right.
You know, again, I'll always be interested to see how they change it. From a trading perspective, I could care less.
Right.
Market go up, market go down, whatever they say. I usually try to stay out of it when these guys are talking their heads off. And, you know, I mean, again, like,
oh, yeah.
They're good inflection points to kind of move forward. But as far as like the news goes, I'm just interested to see how they keep kind of addressing this and what creative ways they can come up with to kind of move it forward.
That's the fun.
Right. Exactly. It's almost like it's entertainment at this juncture.
Which word are they going to use this time?
Right.
All right. Got any other stories?
I think that's all we have for news.
Do you want to try and do a segue into one of the live reads?
All right, sure. All right, you know who doesn't really care about the FOMC and basis points and all of the stuff that we just talked about? The Two Bulls in a China Shop is proudly brought to you by Sue Pullen. Did I say that right? Pullen?
Yeah, oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah.
All right, nice. At Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender, Sue Pullen is a certified mortgage advisor who focuses on finding the right products for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners, whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage. I still don't know what that is.
Reverse mortgage. Be careful. She'll pop in.
Maybe. Okay, maybe she can help me. She's licensed in over 27 states, so she can help just about anybody listening. So reach out and see what Sue can do for you. The best way to reach her is to just give her a call. Her number is 520-977-7904 or in an email at spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number 2289. Sue Pullen has an MLS number of 206048. That email again is spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number one more time, 520-977-7904.
She's a mortgage lender. I think she does care about the rates.
Oh, geez. Do you want to do a different one?
No, I think it's hilarious. I might even leave this bit in. Two Bulls in a China Shop is also proudly affiliated with Trade Pro Academy. The Trade Pro Academy is an educational platform that offers institutional trader development programs to new and experienced independent traders. If you need the translation, that means that you can learn to trade just like those big institutions. You know the ones that make the markets, that screw up their orders and accidentally crash Sweden's stock market, those ones. They've got a great staff of highly knowledgeable and successful traders, and there's no better place that we've found to learn everything you need to know to be a successful trader. Find them online at tradeproacademy.com, or you can use our affiliate link in the episode description, as it's a great way to support the show and improve your own knowledge and skills. And if you join that Discord, we have links for 10% discount codes, as long as you don't tell George, because he will murder us. George does not like discounts.
No discounts.
He has been firmly against him. We had to sneak that one past him.
Okay. Kyle Reed's Trade Pro. Repeat again for dramatic effect. Kyle Reed. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You see what I did there?
Oh.
Is the president reading the teleprompter? No. Did that go over your head?
Yeah.
Go over your head? Sorry.
Repeat for emphasis.
Repeat for emphasis.
Jesus.
Kyle Reed's Trade Pro. Should I pump my own stuff? Are we doing that?
Yep.
What are we doing here?
Go ahead.
The awesome Flary and Leo at Orderflow Labs, that's me, were kind enough to share their toolkit for trading futures on Sierra Charts. We're also on NinjaTrader and MotiveWave at this juncture with the team at Two Bulls. And we've got some amazing content from custom studies for structure and execution. We've got buy-sell zones, exhaustion absorption detectors, and everybody's favorite, the reconstructed tape. We've got pretty much something for everybody who's looking to explore order flow. We're consistently adding and testing new studies, and we have a ton of support to just help you guys use the tools, whether it's through educational content on the tools specifically or just how we're using the tools and some of the nuances on how we're seeing the market. So if you're trading futures, definitely check us out. That's orderflowlabs.com, or just rewind to the beginning where I was supposed to pump some other stuff and I just said all the things about Orderflow Labs. We're in there as well.
Yeah, you guys have been doing some amazing stuff over there. I love the educational content you guys have been starting to really focus on.
I appreciate it. It's been fun, man. It's been really fun to kind of connect. And it's always cool to see the way that people fold this stuff into their process and just kind of go from there. So pretty cool. But that's enough about that. I think I've tried to sneak Orderflow Labs in like a few too many times. So let's talk about some stocks. What do we have going on? Oh, there's a song, a stock song? Stocks.
Stock time.
Now it's talk about stocks time. Looking for setups, it's still not advice. Big moves, fresh news, and earnings. All that we're saying, it's still not advice.
Stocks.
Please don't sue us.
Oh, man. I like that.
All right. Big news in stocks. Have you been following Altera's investment in Juul, like the whole fiasco that's been going on there?
I haven't. Are you going to fill me in?
I will. You know what Juul is, right? One of those vaping sticks.
Yeah, it's like a little vape nicotine.
I'm not sure why Juul is the only one that's been like attacked by the FDA, but it's basically worth 5% of its original value that Altera paid when they invested into it. It was originally worth like $13 billion, and now its value is less than $500 million, as they reported in their second quarter earnings.
That would have been a good short.
Well, the crazy thing is Altera has actually held up okay. Maybe not quite so well.
Yeah, I was going to say they don't look like they're doing too good. I just took a look.
No, okay. Yeah, they were doing well when they're in the 50s. I didn't see. They bottomed out at 41, set a new lower low. That's not a good sign. If you like dividends, though, they are still a pretty good stock for that. I think their dividend yield is now up to 8%.
Are they a dividend stock?
Yeah, they've been a fantastic one. Oh, I've had them for years.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a really great just dump some money in, and it's in theory never going to go all the way down, and you're always just going to get your dividends based on shares.
Well, you say that, except it's a tobacco company, and that might be a tough one to bet on for a future going forward.
You think at some juncture they ban tobacco? I just can't see it.
I think they're going to do, I mean, they already started talking about doing things to reduce the nicotine levels, which I'm 100% for, even as a smoker. But I mean, I just can't imagine they're going to be around for forever.
Wow.
10 years. I mean, yeah, you're probably fine.
Nothing in the market shocks me. Yeah, it could happen.
I mean, it held a pretty nice support right around 41.10. It's kind of stalling right now at 44. I would have liked to have seen it retest 45. And if I wanted to be bullish, I kind of want to see it break up over where that initial pause was, right around that 45 resistance level. But definitely one that I'm keeping an eye on. The volume has been increasing on this latest run up. Looks like they just reported, we just said they reported their earnings. They actually did beat on their EPS. So another good sign for them. That means those dividends shouldn't be in danger, at least.
There you go.
But yeah, definitely. It's one that I've had in my portfolio for a while, and I don't have any plans on cutting it anytime soon, but I might have to reevaluate that if we lose this support.
Might have to look at that. You know, a funny side fact here for this particular company, that name, that there's no way to say the name of this company without smiling. And that's Altera? How they came up with that name.
Really? Or Juul? Yep. Which one?
No, Altera.
Altera.
Altera. You can't say it without smiling. It's it's impossible to have a frowning face while saying those allocation of letters. And that's genius marketing.
Did you know they used to own Kraft too?
Why not, right?
Right.
Why not? Cigarettes and mac and cheese, let's go.
That's my fucking afternoon.
Sounds like college.
What's one? You had one about Apple, I think, right?
Yeah. So Apple beat earnings again in a recession, which, you know, it's absolutely wild. Like, it just blows my mind. And not only did they beat earnings, they set record revenue.
Holy shit.
So, you know, the market's supposed to be declining and all these, you know, I mean, the jobs market, all of the stuff that we've been going through for the last little bit. So Apple beats earnings. They set record revenue with all of this stuff going on. It makes no sense to me, but I love Apple products. So in some weird way, it does make sense that of all the things people would eliminate, it's not going to be an iPhone. It's not going to be their AirPods or their whatever, their iPads and whatever other products that they have. So yeah, new record revenue for Apple. They beat earnings. And I think for the market in general, that is probably the biggest catalyst, along with anything else that came out this week, that's going to continue to have this market go. Because if the darling of the market, Apple, can continue to set record revenue and can continue to beat earnings, you know, there's just a trajectory from that that I think is like up and to the right. And
yeah,
I think we saw that this week. So, you know, pretty shocking, I guess, in a way. I mean, I don't follow this stuff very closely to know, like, you know, whether or not we should expect that. But I just think, like, if you like step back and take like an analytical look at like, should they have had record revenue over this last quarter? I think the answer should be no. Quite like anybody would just like put an objective view on it. But hey, here we are, new record revenue. They beat earnings and, you know, market goes rippy rip.
I mean, I guess it just goes to show you that phones are a necessity these days.
An iPhone for life. Android sucks.
The thing that always surprises me when I look at Apple's stock chart is that it's nowhere near its pre-COVID highs. When you look at some of these other companies, these big names that have been beaten down, like Apple is like the one that's still holding like well above that. I think the pre-COVID high was at 81. And after that earnings report, it's trading, I think it closed this week at 162.5. I mean, that's insane to me.
It's so impressive. It's
also just crossed its 200-day moving average too, if you can believe that.
And that pullback, I mean, the bottom of Apple was very clean too. Like that bottom down at like 129, 130 mm-hmm. was very organized. It was very high time frame, so it was on a daily, weekly, and monthly level, kind of kicking out of there. And they are well on their way to retracing the larger move down from 180. Uh-huh. And they just got above, you know, they just got above this 150 level that you were kind of mentioning. And I think that's a level to watch moving forward. Like this solid weekly close above that 150 level really makes this this move much more convincing. And I think any pullbacks into sort of this last leg up and that consolidation at the lows is probably just a good buy. And, you know, whatever your trading style is, you know, if you're averaging in, you know, long-term portfolio, whatever you do, I just think that this generally looks like a really strong move from a strong company in a weak economy, and seems like just logically a good time to maybe hop on the train on any pullbacks.
Apparently recessions are good for phones and computers.
Duly noted. Next recession.
I know, right? All right. Last one I have on here. I wanted to talk real quick about Walmart, and I had to look for a news story to be able to bring them up.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I didn't really need to, but apparently Walmart is opening up these little outlet stores at like getaway locations, like places where people go camping and shit.
This is so stupid. I'm sorry.
I know. Did you see the image that's on there?
It's so dumb. Like, what is that? It's like a beat up food truck.
I know. And it's selling, so they're selling like hiking gear, leisure activities, campfire equipment. Fuji film camera? They still make those disposable cameras?
Is that like the ones they used to leave on wedding tables? take pictures. The big question is, do you think that they asked to look at your receipt when you leave this
pop-up? Oh, God. Is there going to be an old man standing in front?
Yeah. Sir, I'm going to need to see your receipt.
Hands you a little shopping bag.
No, I've low-key been waiting for somebody to ask for my receipt for the longest time since a guilty pleasure of mine is like watching those videos. People are walking out and they're like, no, I'm not showing you my receipt. And it just never happens to me. I never get pulled over. So I can't like, I can't film, you know, police or something. Like that's a big one too. And then I nobody ever asked me for my receipt. Like I can't audit anything.
I used to work with the guy whose favorite prank to do when he was walking around in a Walmart was to like grab like KY jelly and throw it in an old couple's cart in front of them when they're checking out.
How'd this get in here? Oh, exactly. It's okay. You can just put it through. We'll be discreet.
The reason why I wanted to bring up Walmart is because we're getting close to that back to school season, and the freaking strength that Walmart has been showing on this run up after this latest dump. It was back on the 26th when they revised their earnings forecast for the year, and the stock just dumped from, let's see, was it 132, somewhere around there, down to 120, and then it has just been bought up since then.
Yeah, that's been a rip from that 120. Was that an earnings gap? Why did they gap down like that?
That was when they revised their earnings. Their earnings don't come out until the 16th.
Oh, I see that.
And wow, they still have a gap to fill from the last earnings dump. But one of the guys that we talked to, that was Stephen Mathai Davis, the guy who runs QAI, the AI-driven investment platform. One of the offerings that they were putting together was a back-to-school play, which is like a weekly balancing. It's a whole thing, but the idea behind it is that the companies that benefit most from the back to school shopping tend to do really well coming into right about now. In fact, we might have missed it actually now that I look at this chart.
Makes sense. You know, something I was stalking, and this has nothing to do with Walmart, but maybe in that bucket of like back to school plays, is we've got some kids going to school, and like all things, you can order and just have them shipped to your house. There's back to school kits, and there's companies that are doing like back to school kits, and so you can take your school's you know, whatever list and upload it to this site, and then they'll find you, sort of like they'll put a basket or a few baskets together, and then you can show your kids which basket, and they'll be like, oh, I want that one, it's got the unicorns, and this one's got Superman or whatever.
Nice.
And you can pick a basket for your kids. I'm like, man, is this company publicly traded?
Right.
This is a genius idea.
What was the name of them?
Oh, I have to look. I have to look. The name of it was My Wife Spends Too Many R on Amazon.com.
That sounds about right. Yeah, so Walmart, definitely one to keep an eye on. It's coming right into the area that initiated that dump when they revised that forecast. So it'd be really interesting to see how it responds in this area.
I see that. Hot tip, let's look for a gap up.
Right.
Let's look for a gap above that. That would be... really? Wow. What a low, that huge gap. I mean, that gap runs from basically 46 all the way down to like 37. That's a big opportunity right there.
Yep.
I'm not a big Momo guy, but that seems like a pretty cool opportunity there.
If you figure out how to trade it, tell me.
Buy and close eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop at lows. Or you can put your stop too tight like someone else we know, and
yeah,
there'll be consequences. Trust me.
Sounds like we got a bet pick.
Yep.
I swear to God, if Walmart shows up on randoms, I'd be livid.
And it caps out and just crushes most of the Oh, man. Well, that was stocks. Should we jump into crypto?
Yeah, I think so.
Got some fun stuff to talk about there. I got some crypto in my wallet. Yeah, I got some crypto in my wallet. Some Doji, Sushi, Polka Dot, NFT. Decentralized, anonymized, fabulous cryptocurrency.
Well, I'm going to defer to you because, again,
oh, this is mine. Cryptos. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Hexcoin. So, Hexcoin. You know, when we first started talking about, the topics for this, I started in the crypto space. It's really what sort of, sparked my sort of, actual interest in, getting serious about trading and learning some of sort of the foundation that has kind of led to my trading today. But I still follow it. I'm not heavily invested in it. I certainly don't day trade it. You know, I bag hold a few things and just kind of move on. But this is one that's been on my radar lately, and it's kind of like a fun play. just to kind of throw some money at and whatever. But anyways, this is Hexcoin. And so that's H-E-X. And it's really not about the coin or the fundamentals for me. It's about the guy who runs this thing. And the founder, Richard Hart, is essentially one of these like OG Bitcoiners. He was, you know, he's got a lineage back to sort of like the original sort of blockchain team. And some of the, you know, some of the people have even speculated that he is Satoshi. And he's even claimed to be Satoshi at some junctures. And it's just a wild story. But at the end of the day, this guy is just a character. And he believes that and has made some pretty really, really outstanding calls. Certainly check out some of his content. I think we're going to put his TikTok on there because his TikTok is absolute fire. And the guy gets on there. He's like wearing, I don't know if it's custom or what, but he's got like what looks like a Louis Vuitton purse, but it's a coat. And he's got, you know, that cross purse thing that guys wear now where it's like the purse in the front.
The man bag.
And he sits in like a throne. He doesn't have like, you know, nowadays streamers have sort of like the streamer chair. This guy sits in a throne. And
oh my God.
It caught my attention. And I did a little of due diligence, as much as you're going to do when you're throwing money into a shitcoin. But, you know, this hex coin is essentially a different version. You're sort of locked in, and it's the idea is that he says that the best way to sort of like make money in crypto is not to be day trading this thing. It's to get into a coin and be locked in and let it run up. And that's how he made his fortune in Bitcoin. And that's why he started Hexcoin. And so when you buy the coin, you're essentially, again, don't quote me on any of this officially, but like you're essentially sort of like stuck in it for some period of time. Mm-hmm. It's super hard to buy, but it's a fun coin. So I threw a little bit at it. It just rallied 20% today, which was pretty cool. Made a little bit today on that. But I just think overall, it's a cool play. The guy's a character. He seems to, for the most part, kind of watch out for the greater sort of crypto moon boys. And he made some really strong calls about the DeFi sector. And a lot of these companies sort of, they're like after, you know, crumbled. We've had a lot of big DeFi names in the crypto space come down. And even from that, some of these DeFi names coming down, taking out some of the bigger funds that are involved in this space. You know, again, not to get too much into that, but, you know, this Hexcoin idea is kind of cool. And I just like the founder. He's just fun to watch. And, you know, I'll throw a little bit on and see if this guy's the real deal. But for all the fun stuff he does and what he says he's doing for the community and all the moon boys, there is a group of people who still say and are on the other side of the fence that this is sort of another long-term play. And this is just another shitcoin and blah, blah, blah. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm hoping to get a nice, you know, like the standard crypto, like 10x out of this thing. And maybe take some off the table and see if I can run with it. But, you know, again, it's an interesting coin. And I think it's one that's it's on my radar. It's worth watching. It's a fun story anyways, even if you just got a little bit in it. It's kind of fun.
As like if you're trying to find a coin that you want to blow up, that's kind of what you need, isn't it? You need the founder or the people that are representing it to be like completely
crazy,
insane almost.
Yeah. Or, you know, the best is if the founders are anonymous, like, that's the big thing in NFT. Like if the projects are sort of like anonymous projects and you don't know who the founding team is, then you're getting rug pulled for sure. it's just a good way. I've got a couple of worthless NFTs in my crypto bag, but you know, fun to try.
Right. All right. Hex. Looks like they got a website too. Is it really at a 29 billion market cap?
It's huge.
That's pretty impressive for a shitcoin.
I don't know if it's technically a shitcoin. I basically just everything that's not Bitcoin or Ethereum is.
He's got a Daytona car.
is basically a shitcoin. But there's a lot. And I think, again, like that has to do with the lockup that goes with this coin and look into it and on how far it is and stuff like that. But, you know, essentially, it's like it just keeps growing because there's just buying. There's very little selling. So it's a cool concept. And again, like the character is just fun to follow. So it's an entertainment value at the very least.
Yeah, if nothing else, you just think of it as you're basically subscribing to his Patreon.
Yeah, right. Supporting his TikTok.
Right.
Oh, man. So that was crypto. Should we jump into the good, the bad, and the ugly for this week?
You want to take a shot at me?
Yeah, you want to hear mine, or are you going to lay your nasty on me? All right, here we go. So my good, again, this is a little bit of an Orfo Lab setup, but we have a weekly Delta Pivot setup. We just did our year anniversary stream. At the end of that stream, we looked at the setup for next week. It's basically based upon expansion and contraction of the ranges that are created from the way that we track Delta. And last week was, we kind of jokingly put the GIF in our Discord of the perfect storm, right? And that guy's sitting there, he's like, it's the perfect storm. Last week was that. So it was a bearish cross of the weekly Delta Pivot. So the RTH session was net selling compared to the overnight session, and their point of control from a Delta perspective had dropped below the other sessions. And it was an expanding range week. And on expansions, we looked to fade last week's trend, and last week's trend was clearly up as well as this week's. And that's not to say that we're going to trade short the entire week, but we're going to look for an opportunity to trade short from the sort of extensions of that. Mm-hmm. And this was one that I just nailed. And I've seen this trade happen a lot. It's one that we've sort of developed over time. And this was just a good one for me. So the week of Delta Pivot setup, rode that from 12,477 down to the pivot and then the low. It was like a 400-ish point trade. So it was a good trade.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was a good one.
My good for the week was just today's trading in general. I had been, it seemed like since I got that prop account with Apex, which I can badmouth them, right? You're not. Yeah, Apex was terrible, but they had a flash sale going on. So I was excited to, you know, just throw $30 at it and see if I can fund it trading the stuff that I've been learning as we've been doing the mini series with you. But they are kind of shady, it seems, with the way they execute some of your orders. Like you'll think that your stop took you out, but then suddenly you got another position on out of nowhere, like, you know, shit like that.
Oh, and then they blame Rhythmic or something.
Yeah.
Like that, right? Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I kind of was going downhill from that. I think that just the idea of having a lottery ticket, and then I was learning so much in such a quick amount of time. I was trying to expand the setups I was looking at, and then I just lost all my patience. Quit trying to trade in the areas. I stepped away from the thing that was making me successful to begin with. But Friday was the point where I took a step back. I focused on the levels that I come up with. I used some of the setups that we developed when we talked during the initial first couple or the first episode.
Nice.
And I mean, I ended up, I think, still pretty much flat on the day, but it's a step in the right direction because all my trades were in my areas of interest. I stuck to my plan of sticking and waiting for the points where I wanted to do business. And I was really happy with the way that worked out.
That reset is so key when you're struggling too, to just,
and it's so hard to recognize it. I made the comment the other day that like you step away, you start straying from your path. It happens so slowly. And then by the time you look around and realize you're in another area code and you have no fucking clue what happened.
How did I get here and why am I short?
This isn't not my beautiful wife. This is not my house. What was your bad?
Oh, man. So my bad, that I'm even reading this is dumb, but my bad was Thursday. And it kind of goes with like what you were saying about, you know, sticking to following your plan. I had a great plan. We mapped out what we thought would be a really key level on a pullback. I got long what turned out to be that level in the low of the day on Thursday. And that was like, what, however many hundred points ago, if not 1,000 points ago in NQ, it seems right. Like. So I, you know, and here's the thing is like, I'm a firm believer in sort of good enough. We kind of joke like hashtag good enough. A great friend of mine, Jay, kind of instilled that in me that, you know, you don't have to get it all every day, but there's some points when you just, you really should read the market and what the market is doing. And I think I let that hashtag good enough sort of step in and just like, be like, oh, okay, well, good. Let's just cut it here. We got back to the opening range and, you know, good enough. And this thing just kept on going and kept on going, and it grinded up and it based several hundred points above the opening range, and then earnings hit. And we know what happened,
right?
You know, yesterday into the close. And so, you know, had I been sort of sticking to my plan, that should have been a week maker trade number two for the week for
right.
me. So potentially a month making, you know, combination between those last two trade setups that we talked about. So a little bit disappointed in that because I, you know, sometimes I just get so overwhelmed in the fact of like, okay, you've got a great day. lock it up, good enough. And I before I click that button, I don't stop, pause, and say, well, wait a minute. Are we one time framing higher? Did we just hit a really key level on the lows? Does this have more legs? And I think Thursday was an example of that for me. And in retrospect, and kind of went back and looked at some of my bigger trades or misses, I do tend to do this a little bit too much. So I'm going to take some time to kind of evaluate if I'm over good enoughing and at least put something into right. the process to, before I click that button and just call it good enough, sort of like as a knee-jerk sort of safety mechanism, to really just like take a second to do some analysis. Because typically if I'm saying good enough, it's because this trade is good enough. Like we're well far away from our entry. We're good enough. So I have time to sit back and do some analysis to decide whether or not I think I should at least just maybe move the stop up versus just flatten or something like that. So that was my bad. It was basically like, I think I'm over covering on some of my good trades and not seeing the full expectancy. And I'm doing that to sort of protect P&L versus like actually taking an analysis of the market, kind of deciding from there. So
I think my bad is actually kind of similar. I took a lotto on Facebook since that was my bet pick. I decided to put a little bit of money down on the thing too. The spreads on the options contracts were ridiculous. So I was only able to get one vertical put spread. I think I sold, or I bought the 170 puts and sold the 155s. I think the total cost for the contract was like $5.75, which is about what I wanted to spend. I normally like to try to get two of those. But I was only able to afford one. So I did good on like, you know, managing my risk and not overcommitting to a lotto idea. But the bad part was that it took Purdue on the voice chat Thursday after watching this thing, you know, just slam down on the open to convince me to take profit on it. I mean, I was up 100% on the thing and I was thinking like, oh, I should let this thing run when I can see it, you know, basing around, I think it was around 159. It's like, why am I trying to fight this? I got one contract. I'm up 100%. Like that's where the good enough, I think, would have helped me out.
Yeah. It's that one number when you don't have runners.
Right.
It's like if I close it, it's over. Right. And the emotions that step in on that, you know, taking that step back and in.
That emotion is the hardest one for me to deal with.
Same.
But I like the good enough. It's the second time I've heard somebody else mention that too. And that's something that I'm going to try to reflect on too.
You know, and here's the thing, at the end of the day, like, the good enough mentality is never going to cost you, you know, a ton of money. It might cost you some opportunity cost. And, you know, if you're struggling and you're good enough is too early, right? If it's not accurate good enough, you know, that's where you get in a little bit of trouble. But there's never, you know, really anything super wrong with, you know, closing a great trade and it just keeps going, right? I mean, if you've caught the meat, you're outside of like, you know, two or three average rotations, like, good enough is okay. But I think it's, we do this long enough. We spend this time to, you know, make this analysis of the markets. Like maybe before we say good enough, we take a step back and go, okay, is there more for real? And, you know, really just maybe you don't flatten, you just move your stop down kind of thing. And whether it's too tight, too tight of a stop, like someone else, you know, or
dig the knife in.
Yeah. I mean, is that like the third time now?
My question for you is, when you say good enough, does that mean your day's over? Because that's how I take it.
Yep.
I mean, that means close the charts out and be done.
Oh, yeah. So good enough is, I usually will go hang out with the OFL team or something like that, potentially trade a different account or something like that. I've got like a step down account that would make some sense to trade in certain environments, like if something sets back up after the open. But for the most part, good enough is like, go spend some time with the kids, take an early day, go to the park, you know, whatever it is, go golfing, head to the lake early. I mean, I'll do good enough on the week as well. And, you know, if Wednesday was good, it'll be good enough. I'll tap the wife on the shoulder and say, hey, we're going, let's go to the cabin.
Beautiful. So what was your ugly?
Oh man, stream trading. It was so bad. This is like, it's such a delicate thing. And I, first of all, like, you know, huge kudos to anybody who has the guts to go on stream and click buttons. But it's such a weird set of emotions, because I'll get on stream and I'll, before I start executing trades, I'll typically be very patient and, you know, lay out what I'm seeing. And then you just like, there's this balance between wanting to be entertaining and making sure that you're in trades and then waiting for your actual areas of interest. And it seems like the market has this beautiful way of just, you know, sticking it right up your, you know what. And it's like, okay, well, I'm bored, so I'm going to get into a trade here. Well, now I'm in a shitty trade.
Yep.
As we approach the level that I spent, you know, time talking about, and you just get in this cycle. And so, you know, clicking too many buttons and just sort of that emotional battle of wanting the streams to be entertaining, but also like, it's funny because you want them to be entertaining, so you take more trades, but then you take more trades and the trades suck.
Right.
So then it's not entertaining. Because the trade sucks. And then you try to take more trades that are good, but they end up not being good because you just went through everything you did. And next thing you know, like you mentioned, you're just like, okay, like,
where am I? Just what happened?
Yeah, where am I? whose beautiful wife is this? And whose kids are those in the picture? Like, how did I get in this house?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, stream trading for me. And it was this. So I was on a streak. I think I had 4 months of winning streams. We stream every Wednesday or tried to stream every Wednesday. So it's pretty typical for me too, to do something like this, like to go on a run and it's kind of like, when is the shoe going to fall type scenario. And the shoe fell this week. So I think I was up a few thousand points trading NQ on stream over the last 4 months. And I think I gave back 700 this week. You know, which, whatever, it is what it is. You know, overall, it just, you know, it's just part of the process and something you need to learn. But, you know, it's like, I feel like it's like a little bit of that self-destruct. It's like, I lost on Wednesday's stream with the team. And then we, you know, had our year anniversary today. And I didn't do very well in the first part of the stream. I did okay in the second part. We streamed twice today. But it's just really that emotions. And it's interesting because, you know, it's like you battle these normal emotions of trading your account. And then I complicate it by, you know, having the things that we do and trying to provide some education and content for the stream, but it's a whole nother struggle. So I just continue to look at it as like just something, if I work on my emotions in this space, it's only going to help me in my personal trading to recognize when I'm in these spots, when, you know, to your point earlier, like when I'm not in the zone and when I, you know, I'm way out of the zone and in some random stranger's house. So yeah, it was tough for me this week, and, you know, ended a good win streak on sort of a bad note, and we'll reset next week and have extra information to make it better.
It's tough too when you're streaming, because you have a set amount of time that's supposed to be open for. So you can't just be like, okay, that's my third loss, in 5 minutes, and now I got to close up and see you guys tomorrow. Like, no, you gotta fight your way through it. And there is some, I mean, that would be a good skill to learn, but man, that's a tough one to work through.
There's no need. unless you've got a reason to put content out there.
Yeah.
It's so hard. I wouldn't, like, if you were just doing it to provide entertainment, like there's no financial benefit to streaming your trading.
Yep.
Like personally, like it's just so difficult if somebody's watching you.
And then you feel bad too, because then you know other people are copying you, even though they shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. I don't think, I mean, if anybody's copying my trades ever, you know, I mean, whatever. Sorry. You know, I mean, not like just in general, right? Like, I just don't, you know, not that they're good or bad trades. Like, you should have your own ideas.
If they're not yours, then you shouldn't be. Yeah, exactly. You're not going to learn anything that way. Well, my ugly was everything up to Friday. And this one was a tough one to kind of work through, because my P&L for this week was actually fantastic. Like, I did really well on FOMC. I think I ended each day up about 20 to 40 points on the week, but my trading was so erratic and emotional, based on like emotions. Like, it just, there wasn't any good rhyme or reason. There's way too many of them. And there'd be one or two like really good ideas that worked out, but I was just taking way too much crap. So that's why we always talk about like separating the P&L from the actual like good trading. Like, there's a difference between trading well and having a green week.
Yeah.
And this week for me was a great example of that.
Well, the feedback loop, we've talked a lot about that in the Back to the Futures episodes. You're basically wasting a week of feedback if you're just not going to execute your plan. And so, you know, to your point, it's like, well, Monday through Thursday was basically, whatever, you were scratch for points and P&L wise, but you gained nothing in confidence. You probably deteriorated your process a little bit, and you got no valuable information from a feedback perspective from any of the trades you took if you weren't taking them in your area. And so, you know, it's good to hear though that you recentered for Friday, because that's key. Like, when you're struggling and you identify that, just like going back to the good old trusty is so good.
Mm-hmm. And the being green actually could have been a lot more detrimental, because that makes, when you talk about the feedback loop, like, you don't want to be rewarded for doing bad. But this is a game where, you know, sometimes that happens and you got to be able to recognize it.
Yeah, you take the gifts, right? Because they'll come back too and take them. So they don't stay in your possession very long if you keep doing stuff like that.
How many beginning traders make one big win early on and end up losing more than that win because it reinforces a bad idea?
Is that just like, is that a gambler's fallacy? Is that a real thing that happens to people? Because I feel like the first time I ever went and played blackjack, I won. And I love to play, like, I don't play anymore, but like, I loved to play blackjack for so long after that, because I would always think about that, like, first time I won, and I was like, oh, this is great. I can turn 50 into 300, and then you're turning 300 into 1,000, and then you have nothing.
Right.
What happened here?
The thing with gambling, like, what the addictive part of it, I always thought was it's not the big wins. It's the getting to even after a big loss.
Oh, the comeback. Digging out of the hole. There's two things. So there's two things in gambling that we're off on a tangent here on gambling, but there's two things in gambling that are like not what you would expect when you're a gambler that are the best. And that's being stuck and getting break even. And then on the opposite side of that, being what I call upstuck. So there's nothing worse. Like, losing $1,000 is fine. Being up $1,000 and then losing 500 back is the sickest feeling in gambling.
Oh God, yes.
And you will make the worst decisions ever when you are upstuck. Like, and you feel owed. And the market does that too. The market does that, and that emotion is super real in trading. Like, I was up 100 points today, now I'm only up 50. The market owes me those 50 points and I'm coming for them. And that's when,
yeah, it feels like a 50 point loss, not a 50 point win.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you end up like down 100 points on the day or whatever, if you're gambling down $1,000 or a few buy-ins at the poker table. And it's not the buy-ins it's not the amount of money you ended up net down. It's that you were up. That's how you think of it, right? It's like, oh, I didn't lose. I didn't lose 100 points a day. I lost 200 points a day because I was up. And that's what burns you. And it's so funny, man. It's just that emotions. But yeah, it's a real thing.
All right. Well, I think we've almost got to the end here. You ready to?
Yeah, let's talk bet here. You know, you might have to help me shape this a little bit to make sure that we follow the process. But you guys are going to let me call the bet, I heard.
Well, let me hit the song first.
Yes.
I need it, wanna beat it, gonna win it if I take it from you. Fill in my positions, quit your bitching, random's gonna lose.
Fuck randoms.
Got a chart for the levels and a stop. That's too tight.
I'm gonna cut that in there.
It's bet picking time in the shop, so pick 'em right.
Oh, man.
That was beautiful.
That's one of Dan's original songs we repurposed.
You know, that strikes me as more like his style of music. Mm-hmm. I could see him curating.
Oh, yeah.
Just throwing that out there. I don't know why.
You don't think he's a rapper?
No. No. Fair enough. I do think he has the voice of an angel, though, and that he could probably do just about anything. So,
when you're ready for a theme song, let us know. We'll write one for OFL. Dude,
can you please have him make one for the OFL Back to the Futures? Oh, man. I'll help him.
All right. Let's see what we can do. Oh, he's gonna love.
All right, so let's talk about this bet. Help guide me. Okay. I know what stock I want to trade.
So normally what we were doing before was Dan and me were playing against each other, and we had random as the kind of the benchmark. But I think that the direction of the show has kind of morphed to the point where we're gonna actually make random the bad guy, because fuck him.
Yeah, fuck random.
So it's gonna be me and Dan as a team going forward from this point, trying to beat random.
Okay.
So we're going to let you make the first pick in this new bet format. Basically,
and then us versus them.
You can be long, you can be short, you can have stops, you can have take profits, you can define the trade. Whatever you want to happen, though, has to be defined here in this segment. So if you want an entry range, like, you got to say like the specific entry point. It can be like, you know, open on Monday, it can be a retrace into this level, then I want to go short, stop at this point, take profit down here.
Okay, so can I scale into it? So like, okay, I want to look at go-go in flight.
All right.
Which, you know, is They put the movies on your Delta flights or whatever.
Oh, that's who they are?
That's who they are, Gogo Inflight. And so here's the thing. This stock likes to move. It's pulling into daily and weekly resistance. It's on a move up. And, you know, the market's lost its freaking mind. We're fake in a recession or whatever we're calling this thing. Like, people are flying. There's monkeypox. Let's see this stock go down, right? So you've got resistance right at 1753. And then you've got another key resistance right at 1817. So how can I frame this best? Can I maybe say 50% of the position right at 1753 and 50% of the position if we push to 1817 for a short?
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Wait, you got to say that again so I got to write it down though.
All right. So Gogo Inflight, it's GOGO. We're going short 50% position at 1753. And 50% position at 1817.
Okay. And then.
And if it makes it easier, you can just say market short on open on Monday.
We do that sometimes too.
Because we're basically there. You know, we closed. I guess I could look to see if they after hours popped into that resistance. But
the danger of the market short, which is what we are just marketing in on Monday, is that sometimes you get the move in pre-market and then your entry ends up being right where you're wanting to get out.
All right, we'll just say, like, if we open above 1753, get me short 50%, and then we'll do another 50% if we reach 1817. And, you know, I know stop losses are definitely suggested, but if we learned anything in this episode, having too tight of a stop is just going to cost you more pain and punishment in this bet. And so we are just going to let this baby run. I've got confidence that
no stops. All right.
No stop. Let it run. We're rejecting this level. It's gonna happen.
No stops.
God damn it. Do I have to take profit, or do we just like see how we're doing?
It'll just close out at the end of Friday.
All right, we'll be good. We'll be good. We'll pull back into like 1640 or something like that. We'll be good.
Let's get a random here. Let's see. I've got 10 and 8. So the exchange is going to be NASDAQ. All right, energy. Oh, God damn it. Son of a bitch. All right, random is going long. Centennial Resource Development, CDEV.
What? All right, let me put this in. Okay, so where are they going to go long?
Market open on Monday, and then it closes out.
CDCE?
CDEV, CDEV.
Oh, I'm so excited to track this. They're going long?
Yep, random always goes long. That's why it's so brutal to lose to it, because it makes money in a fucking bear market.
Oh, wow. That's actually a pretty good trade.
I know. It happens every goddamn time.
It looks pretty good. It's about to break key resistance. Uh-oh.
Son of a bitch.
Fuck random.
Oh, God. You need to get you a sticker.
All right. I'll take him down for you guys. All right. I'll take him down for you guys.
All right. And then last key piece of business. You want to give us some consequences for losing the month of July?
Yeah, we're going to have to talk consequences. So here's the deal. We're going to need to see feet.
Oh, God.
We're going to need to see feet pics. It's going to be mandatory, and they're going to have to go on Twitter.
Can I at least trim my nails and dress them up so they look nice?
Hey, listen, there's somebody out there for everybody, and I think, especially in the feet genre, you do you, I guess is what I'm saying, because someone will appreciate it out there.
Oh, my God.
But, we're going to need to see feet on Twitter.
Oh, no. Well, we might get more followers out of that, though. So that might be
There's nothing tiny watch. Oh, I'm making an Anon account that looks like he follows feet. And I'm gonna troll you guys. Oh. Alright guys, so we are going short Gogo in flight. We are looking to short hopefully on the open 1753 for half of a position. We will put the other half of position on at 1817. We have no stop. We're letting this thing run. We're fully confident in our abilities to reject this resistance. So that's what I'm leaning into next week. The team's got to come along with me. We're against random, and they're about to break out from key resistance. So we might be in trouble, but we'll see. And expect some feet pics here in the near future on Twitter.
Oh, my God. I can't wait till Dan hears this.
Yeah, it should be good. Oh, man, it's going to be great. But anyways, guys, you know, It was just a pleasure. I appreciate you letting me join and fill in. It was fun to do the intro. I did say when I agreed to do the guest spot, I said, as long as I get to do the intro, like, I love the intro. I love what he does. I want to put Dan. I worked on my voice. I look in the mirror. I spent some time on it. So hopefully you guys think it was fun too. And again, I just thank you guys for having us on. It's always a pleasure and look forward to the next time. So anyways, all right, folks, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks for coming by, but we're closing up shop. We'll be back with you soon. And until then, happy trades.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.